Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Washington Weekly Podcast on the UBS In The Now podcast channel. Joining us for the conversation on this Tuesday afternoon, glad to welcome back Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. Shane, thank you for dropping by. It's nice to be on the mic with you as always. Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you for having me back, Dan.
Absolutely. So, Shane, I know over the past few months we've spoken a lot about the One Big Beautiful Bill. Now that it has been signed into law, we did see that milestone for the administration and congressional Republicans a couple of weeks ago at this point. As we look ahead, what are some other priorities now for Congress? What will Congress be focusing on?
Yeah, you know, no rest for the weary. Congress has kind of a full slate on their agenda in the coming, you know, days, weeks, and months. You know, this week in the House is crypto week, so a lot of action on that front. But also, they'll be dealing with the Defense Authorization Bill, which is an annual bill authorizing different policies for the Department of Defense and about $1 trillion in spending. It does not actually contain the funding. That's a second act later, which would be done during the appropriations process. And speaking of the appropriations process, if Congress does not act on the 12 separate funding appropriations bills, a government shutdown could happen at the end of September. So that will take up most of Congress's time, I think, over the next 2+ months. But there are other items, on the docket. You know, the Senate will continue to confirm nominations to the executive branch, as well as probably some judicial nominees. So they'll be continue to be busy. But to your point, I think maybe the heaviest lift of all, the One Big Beautiful Bill, has been accomplished. So, you know, these other items, some of them may not ever become law, but some of them will be. And so they'll be busy. But I think, you know, kind of from a certain perspective, the Congress has probably hit their high water mark for 2025 in the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill.
On the media networks, I've seen House Speaker Mike Johnson suggest that there may be reconciliation bills coming up in the fall and spring. What are the prospects, would you say, Shane, for additional reconciliation bills to take shape in the months ahead?
Yeah, you know, looking back over the past 25 years or so, there have been about 10 reconciliation bills, which, you know, suggests to you that it's not an every year occurrence, let alone the prospect of doing three in, you know, 12-month span. You know, so there's that part of me that says that I'm pessimistic about it, but there is serious conversation about it. I think you have in the lead up to the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill, you know, a number of Republicans were maybe frustrated that their priorities didn't make it in, or they wanted to see more deficit reduction. So, you know, Speaker Johnson did say, you know, we expect to do more. And I think that was to try and at least show some Republicans that, you know, this isn't a one and done for them. I think there are a number of Republicans that recognize that they have the trifecta right now, which is the White House, Senate, and House. And that is rare, and they don't want to squander the opportunity to pass serious legislation. So I think they'll take a look at it. But, you know, recognizing history shows that, you know, more than one reconciliation bill is a heavy lift. And so, you know, I'm not saying no, but I'm a little bit skeptical of that this will actually happen. But it's definitely we're going to be something following, because if they are able to make it come to fruition, it would probably be meaningful for us to be paying attention to.
Definitely something we'll keep an eye out for as we make our way into the fall and beyond. You did mention, Shane, Crypto Week. This sounds interesting and ties into the Genius Act, which we've covered here on the podcast in recent weeks. Could you provide our listeners with a sense for the momentum taking shape this week up on Capitol Hill within the House as it relates to crypto initiatives in particular?
Yeah, I'll start with the Genius Act, which you mentioned. You know, this passed the Senate. The House had been taking a different tack, but I think what we're seeing is that the House is just going to take up the Senate-passed bill, the Genius Act, which aims to regulate the stablecoin market, which is well over $200 billion. and creating a clear framework for these digital currencies. And so, you know, if the House is successful, this bill will go to the president's desk for his signature, which, as you may remember, President Trump signaled a couple of weeks ago that he wanted the House to do. So I think that is likely on its way to the president's desk for his signature. But this is crypto week, so that's not the only thing going on in the House. They're also looking at another bill that would essentially push back on the Federal Reserve and some of their actions with regard to crypto. Additionally, the House will consider a bill called the Digital Asset Marketing Clarity Act, which aims to kind of define and establish roles for the SEC versus the CFTC. And because there's this big divide about, you know, is it a commodity or is it a property, right? And so to try and define the two so that there's clarity there would be meaningful to the digital asset market. However, I'm not sure that this one becomes law yet. You know, I don't know if the Senate is ready to move on it yet. So that's a little bit more unclear. But the base bill, the Genius Act, I think will make it to the president's desk.
Well, it is indeed very interesting to see government take more of an active interest in crypto. So we'll continue to keep an eye on these initiatives. If we turn over to U.S. trade policy for a few moments, over the weekend, we did see headlines that President Trump issued fresh tariff threats aimed at the European Union as well as Mexico. Now, this having had extended the reciprocal tariff deadline last week to August 1st, so just a couple of weeks away. And of course, a lot of negotiations still outstanding with a number of countries, though. How have the European Union and Mexico responded to these latest tariff threats, and any sense for how negotiations are shaping up?
Yeah, I think this threat was, a tactic to try and kick those negotiations into overdrive and really get something done sooner rather than later, right? You know, here you and I are talking on the 15th, midway through the month, and, you know, August 1st. It's just around the corner. So I think this was a means to really push negotiations forward. And you've seen, I think, the EU and Mexico react accordingly. You know, the president of Mexico, she's indicated that she believes they'll be able to get a deal done in that time frame. The EU is maybe a little bit slower, but I think you're seeing EU trade ministers strategize together right now to try and come up with something to offer the Trump administration as an off-ramp to this. And, you know, they obviously, you know, are trying to resist the urge of saying we'll retaliate. But, you know, I think they're trying to be, in their minds, constructive. But, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, I think as to be expected on the larger trade front, you know, there is going to be some turbulence over the coming weeks as we near that August 1 deadline.
Yeah, this all remains very fluid and a lot more to come as we continue to track these negotiations. Maybe one more topic, if we spend a few moments on geopolitics. President Trump did announce yesterday, Monday, a weapon provision effort for Ukraine and also threatened aggressive tariffs aimed at Russia if a resolution with respect to the Russia-Ukraine war isn't achieved. What can you share with us, Shane, in terms of the latest there?
Yeah, that's right. You know, from the Oval Office, sitting with the NATO Secretary General, President Trump, you know, made this announcement for a deal for the U.S. to sell weapons to NATO allies with the understanding that they will then send the weapons to Ukraine. So this is, you know, kind of not a full 90-degree turn for President Trump, but he is clearly kind of turning away from his strategy of earlier of trying to broker peace between Putin and Zelensky in Ukraine to more a little bit in your face and trying to put more pressure on Putin. And he gave a 50-day kind of deadline for a ceasefire. And it sounds like Russia has rejected this. So I think, you know, President Trump is trying to show Russia that, you know, he's serious about this and, you know, kind of departing his previous strategy to achieve peace between Ukraine and Russia, as, you know, it's proven harder than, you know, he anticipated. I think, you know, it was, you know, somewhat not surprising that this was not reached, at least to me. I think, you know, the conflict between Russia and Ukraine is really being driven hard by Putin, and, you know, he does not want to, you know, negotiate his way out at this time. And I think he wants to press on for a more decisive victory in his mind.
Well, we shall see how this takes shape, though. Shane, thank you very much for spending a few moments today with our listeners, our clients, hitting on a range of topics top of mind for many. And as always, do look forward to resuming with our conversation again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Dave.
Thank you, Shane. Appreciate it. And again, today we have been joined by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs US here at UBS. As always, I do like to point out that you, our listeners, and especially our clients of UBS, can now locate the latest Washington Weekly publication located up on ubs.com/Washington Weekly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.